You're listening to the Inside Commerce podcast hosted by experienced consultants James Gerd and Paul Rogers. Inside Commerce is your fast track to digital knowledge, featuring interviews with leading e-commerce retailers, industry thought leaders, and the C-suite of key tech companies to explore the latest in digital strategy, customer experience, and tech. Discover what the latest trends really mean and get practical advice based on experience to help fine-tune your e-com strategy and tech stack. Follow us on LinkedIn and reach out to James or Paul if you'd like to discuss an e-commerce project. We hope you enjoy the latest episode. Today's episode is sponsored by Scale Commerce Engine and Swap Commerce. You'll discover more about them later on. Let's set the scene for our conversation. So we are talking about the art and science behind automated email marketing flows, e-com, and we're delighted to welcome a highly experienced consultant here, Hannah Spicer, who's a Klaviyo specialist for premium and luxury retail brands. Hey, Hannah, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Really happy to have you on. Looking forward to this conversation. We've got lots of conversations going on with customers at the moment around like eCRM. So this is going to be really useful for me as well. It's great. It's totally selfish of me. But let's start, before we ask you loads of questions, let's start with your background and like why you've decided to focus in on Klaviyo for luxury fashion and retail.
Yeah, so I've worked in-house at retail brands for, I've worked within e-commerce and digital marketing now for 20 years, and that has always been in that space. So when I was in-house, I worked at brands including Harvey Nichols, where I launched the first e-commerce website there. De Beers, Stella McCartney, and Kurt Geiger were other places that I worked. So I'm very familiar with the challenges and approaches that come with premium and luxury retail. And I was really fortunate in terms of the timing because I launched my consultancy business at pretty much the same time that Klaviyo opened their London offices. So I got to know the tool off the bat, absolutely love it, and now I only work with that tool with my clients.
Great. So I guess first question, and before we get into any kind of specific areas, can you just talk us through any trends you're seeing in the CRM space? So across all channels, kind of what you're seeing, what your brands are looking at. Yeah, any general kind of trends?
Yeah, for sure. So one is SMS. I think in the UK, we've been much more tentative to get involved with SMS and bring this into CRM activities. Potentially, you know, even more so for premium luxury brands, but I'm seeing more of them adopt that and start to bring that into their marketing. I have to mention AI. I think that's becoming used more and more in a number of different ways. So definitely in terms of kind of segmentation and customer insight. So rather than just using, you know, historical data on a customer, you can now start to use kind of predictive analytics on things like churn risk, next purchase date, lifetime value. And then I think also smart sending in terms of like when you send your campaigns, this is answering like a very common question I have from clients in terms of when is best to send. And while there are certain guidelines that do tend to work for most retail businesses, if you can hand that over to AI to kind of segment and send and find that for your database, even better. And the other AI piece, I guess, is copywriting. I think on, you know, again, for premium luxury brands, tone of voice is really important. So I don't think they're going to be using it for everything. But on kind of short, sharp copy burst like subject lines, I think it makes sense to start looking at those and A/B split testing and seeing what works. And then finally, first-party data is just becoming more and more important. So clients are really focusing on other ways that they can help build out that data and picture around their customers. So things like quizzes, more kind of on-site forms and things like that to help capture that data.
Great. On that one, so I've written down here that I had a sub-question around the first-party data side. Biggest trend that we've seen across our clients and across all, like the majority of them, is moving more to account-based experiences and like pushing more people to build an account and then trying to collect more data with that and then also track more effectively for logged in customers. Is that something that you've seen as a trend in the industry amongst your clients?
Yeah, I'm starting to see that with the more established brands that I'm working with, definitely. They're trying to find real reasons for customers to create those accounts and log into them. Yeah, for sure. So I think that's another good approach.
Great. And then next question. So we obviously talked about this a little bit before we started recording, But a trend that I've seen is that to kind of using Klaviyo, and this does apply to other CRM tools as well, but there's kind of like a piece missing, which is kind of customer insights and kind of deeper data around things like lapsed customers and that kind of analysis piece. And I think historically, a lot of brands have worked with different service providers that have maybe provided this, but now I feel like it's a bit of a gap. What tools have you seen different brands use to kind of fill this, or is it a gap that you're seeing as well?
Yeah, I think it is a gap. I mean, you can do so much with Klaviyo, so much, but I think if you've got that additional data on top, it makes things much more sophisticated. So an example I'll give is working with an apparel brand who know exactly from that kind of, as you talked, having that kind of CRM agency information, they know exactly the average lapsing date between a first and second purchase and a second and third purchase. So whereas we might be using a bit of finger in the air for when we launch a win-back flow for another brand, for them, we know exactly what day that we want to start talking to them and winning them back. So I think it adds, yeah, as I said, a layer of sophistication. It's really useful to have that. In terms of what tools work, I'm not 100% sure. I don't know if you've got any suggestions on that.
I guess we've seen, you has previously mentioned Suite Analytics, which is one
that
amongst clients, definitely. But yeah, there's one called 42 in the US that a few of our clients are using. Polar Analytics, I would say, is probably the biggest trend we've seen over the last few months, where more and more people are using that as like an introductory solution, the kind of hybrid kind of BI and customer reporting. And then OmniCommerce was the other one. Which I think a few of our mutual clients use or have used as well.
Hi, I'm Thomas, Director Growth at Scale. The world's fastest growing e-commerce platform has landed in the UK, with global brands like Manchester United, Deichmann, Snipes, and Marco Polo trusting us to scale their commerce businesses. Are you ready for a new e-com experience? Talk to Scale today, because life is just too short for painful commerce.
Oh, God, half the fun is trying to work out how you select a tool when there is so much choice out in the market. Hence why we initially started this podcast, but those are discussions for other days. So let's move on to some of the flow-based stuff, Hannah, because this is a bit that gets me really excited, because I've worked with some clients on these projects. I'm not an expert like you, so I'd love to hear your views, because one of the areas I often find people don't pay enough attention to are retention flows for customers after they've become a purchaser, which is when the expectations from a customer increase because they've spent money of you now, and therefore they are expecting something a little bit better. So this is from first-time buyers to incentivizing repeat purchases and reward and other positive behavior. Can you share some examples of how to do this well, other than just discounting and discounting and discounting? Like, what should brands be doing?
Absolutely. So, and just to kind of say, when we're talking about flows, we're basically saying automations or triggered emails. They're called flows in Klaviyo, but in case that doesn't mean anything to anyone listening. Yes, I'm massively passionate about these post-purchase and retention flows, and I think they are a really underutilized area of CRM. Brands are really focused on getting that first sale and then leaving people to kind of fall out of the bottom of the funnel. So, post-purchase journey. So what I'll typically map out for most of my clients is the first communication is about kind of making them feel good about the placing an order and spending money with you. So that can go, you know, 1 or 2 days after they place the order. It's a brand building. It's a content-led email. It's not trying to get them to order again, but it's like making them feel good that they did. So it can be a reminder of your USPs, your sustainability, your materials. You could even talk about, you know, the packaging that they might receive. Communicating again at the time that they receive the product. And some brands are really good at this, and they actually time the email the minute almost you kind of close the door to the courier company, which is so powerful. And this is about kind of making you feel reassured and ready to start using the product. So if it's clothing, it could be how to style it or how to wash it. If it's healthcare or beauty, it's how to start using it and get ready to kind of bring that into your routine. So there's loads of different products that this is relevant for. Following up with kind of asking for feedback. So, you know, asking for reviews or even sending a survey as well to get kind of feedback on the purchase journey and also the product once they've had it for a period of time. You can then start to kind of send them kind of, you know, personalized cross-sell and upsell recommendations. I'd always do this full price first, and then I'd only bring in, you know, incentives when they're a first-time customer and I'm trying to get them to be a second-time customer. But another thing you can do, which is really nice, which is specifically relevant for kind of beauty and healthcare brands, is to really nurture them to make sure they're using your product regularly, because those are the clients that are going to see the results and then they're going to order again. So, you know, supplement brands or hair care brands, you can be really, really thoughtful about this journey. And it could be like 10 days after you think they've started using it, you're probably already seeing these results, but you need to take it for at least 30 days to get these results. Keep going. Have you got any questions? Here's what another customer found when they've been using it. Like, really kind of showing them what that experience can look like. So that can be really powerful. And then, yeah, I think that's covered most of the stuff I would want to bring in on those post purchase journeys.
I have a sub question. So you actually touched on it. So I feel like loads of people ask me for examples of this stuff, and I have only one that I think are like exceptional. And that's Patch. And the reason why I love it is because of what you said. So the second you receive the door is closed from receiving the product, you get the first email. It's just a really nice, like, brand message, and it's kind of, you know, introduce the product and loads of storytelling, and then they gradually kind of get you more bought into like the range and then start to upsell. Do you have any example? Because I personally think, yeah, everyone's always looking for examples of this stuff, and I don't know too
much. Yeah, I do. So there's two women's wear brands that I've bought with recently who did this really well. So one is called Wrapped and Boa and one is called Mother of Pearl. They both hit me with very timely, relevant communications at the time that I received the delivery. One, the Mother of Pearl one, was brilliant because it was talking about their free alteration service, which is just such good timing and brilliant content anyway, brilliant service. I think it's worth looking at these beauty brands as well, because they are ones that really need to kind of nurture you and get you to start using the product. There's a great hair care brand called Shampoo, which is actually spelt C-H-A-M-P-O, so it sounds like shampoo, but it's Shampoo. I've worked with them recently and built up really detailed flows for their different products, because again, they want to make sure that you are using it regularly, that you're really nurtured on that journey, and that you therefore replenish when the time comes. So yeah, I think look to the health and beauty brands for good examples as well.
Yeah, what I love though is the principles you're talking about are applicable across so many different verticals. So there's, I've spoken to a couple of jewelry companies over the years. I have no idea whether they ever listened to what I was saying about one of the great things that you can do instantly on purchase, which is that whole, like, okay, well, keep me excited about, is a, do you know that we offer a free resizing? Because you often get this where somebody goes, oh, do you know what? I didn't quite get it right. And there's that panic. I've just spent loads of money on an expensive item of jewelry. There are all these nice little touches which keep me thinking, oh, you're helping me. You're not just trying to get money out of me. You're delivering an added value. And with software as well, we take a complete opposite, where you've got software where people are subscribing to a SaaS software company. That ability to, when somebody's paid for the subscription, then drop them educational videos and content of, here's how to get the best out of this. Did you know that you've got these amazing features and you can do this, and how are you getting on? There are so many ways you can take your principles and apply it across different products. So I love that. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I'm working with a luggage brand at the moment, and the same. It's like the first communication is how to set up your lock. Mm. And then a couple of days later, we've got some really great content around packing tips. So there's, you know, there's loads of things you can do. And I agree. I think you can think about this and make it relevant for so many different product types.
I think it's the principle, is the mentality of how do I add value, not how do I sell. And I love the fact that you said don't hit them straight away with selling and selling and selling. I'm all in favor of thinking about value whilst selling. And even like, how do you get the most? I like you made this. You alluded to the point earlier. How do you get the most out of your product? And especially a premium product, how can you keep the life life cycle of it going. Even giving washing and care tips of don't wash it every week, etc. There's all these little things that can add up. I've got a question now about ECRM and this email marketing and loyalty, because loyalty is another big trend in there. We all know it. Lots of people are focusing in on loyalty. There's a lot of discussion in the market. There's a lot of vendors out there offer specialized loyalty platforms, but not everyone does it. And people might have it on their roadmap, but they're not ready to launch it. How can you use email marketing effectively when you haven't got like a loyalty program? How, apart from some of the things you said, what are some of the techniques you see people doing well to existing customers to keep them engaged?
Yeah, loyalty is a big topic. And I don't think it's necessarily a loyalty program isn't necessarily right for every business. And I think it can be a real mistake, actually, because once you kind of roll out a fully fledged loyalty program, you're very much locked into it, and it can look really bad if you need to close it down or change it later. I think it's about using these flows and journeys in a smart way to create the similar kind of feelings and behaviors, right? So how do we drive more frequent purchase? How do we reward people for certain behaviors? So I think, you know, the post-purchase flows we've already talked about, and I would always split those out between a first-time versus a repeat customer and talk to them differently. First of all, you should be recognizing that people are shopping with you repeatedly and thank them for that. You can show them really personalized product recommendations. So something as simple as, you know, hi, James, we've pulled 6 new products we think you'll love, and kind of showing people that you know them, showing them more relevant content in your communications to them. I love a VIP flow. So this can be for your kind of top 2% of your customers, but you know that they are incredibly valuable as well. And this can be, you know, there's all sorts of lovely things you can do with this group. It could be that you give them some benefits. So you might say, we're going to expedite the delivery on all of your orders for the next 6 months, or we're going to give you free shipping on all orders for the next 6 months. We've got this personalized customer service email address that you can use, or you can join this WhatsApp group, which not everyone else has access to. You can obviously give them things like early access to new collections and sales. You can ask them for more feedback on your product. So I think there's a lot of work that particularly premium luxury brands can do with that VIP segment too, which can all be flow based. It can all be triggered by someone falling into that behavior. And then you can potentially look at the group below them, so people that look like they are almost falling into that behavior, and how can you help drive them into it? So how can you get them to turn up their frequency of purchase? So I think it's about mapping out the different segments, thinking about the definitions of those different customer segments, and then using flows really cleverly to get people to shop more with you.
Yeah, so I think we've seen a bit of a shift towards VIP from loyalty, and it being like more service based, and also a lot of like surprise and delight as well. So like random gifts and like really considered comms and gifts and, you know, handwritten notes and stuff like that. So yeah, I personally think there's a big move towards that in the market at the moment. So I guess another big topic that I think people struggle with a little bit, measurement. So I guess just from your perspective, like what metrics and KPIs do people use for kind of retention reporting and customer reporting?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, if we're looking at kind of email performance, click rate is definitely the most important metric in my mind in terms of looking at customer engagement. It's more important for me even than actual conversion rate and revenue. And I think that was kind of baked into me in my days at Kurt Geiger, which is, you know, your conversion rate would be very different on a kind of brand building content-led email versus a sale email, but you still want those click rates to be healthy on both of those type of sends, right? So click rate is the number one. But you also need to look at all of the other kind of key email metrics like open rate, unsubscribe rate, conversion rate, spam rate, etc. I also think, and I know a lot of clients that I work with don't do this, so I want to mention it. It is also important to look into the heat maps of the emails that you're sending, so the campaigns that you're sending, and understanding what people are clicking on. And that by that I mean what products, what content, and also what areas of the email. Because if you haven't got any understanding of that, it's you're not going to know what to send in the future. So you can get a lot of insight in actually reviewing that. One example I'll give is that at one brand I worked with, we found that the navigation links in the top of their email were always in the top three most clicked links. So literally just women and men at the top were always really highly clicked on. Now, some brands don't even have those navigation links in their email. So if we hadn't had known that those were being really highly used to get people deeper into the site, we could have taken them out and we could have been suffering as a result. So I think it's really important that clients review that. Talking more on a kind of a CRM level, I think it's really important to look at, you know, the growth of your list and also definitely lifetime value and how that's tracking as well. Just to make sure that you're growing in a meaningful way. You're not kind of, I'm really against kind of trying to grow lists and just have a massive list, which actually isn't engaged or isn't converting and shopping with you. So I think it's really important to look at the quality of your list as well as the fact that it's growing at a rate.
That makes sense. And I guess the next question, and James wrote this question and he's commented on something that really frustrates him. And I guess, yeah, definitely applies to me as well. And I think, just in terms of like perception and kind of, yeah, trying to keep a brand in a good place, like discounting is probably the biggest, one of the biggest things with CRM, where people can get a bit, like people describe it as like crack, I guess, where, you know, you send emails out with discounts and it's going to get the best short-term results, but obviously might impact long-term brand positioning and identity, all of that kind of stuff. What's your view on where discounting sits in a CRM strategy?
Yeah, great question. I think, you know, I've only ever worked with two brands which have had an absolute zero discounting policy. And everyone else has been open to using it in a strategical way. And I think that's really important, as you said, to kind of protect your margins and also your brand. In my mind, if you're using discounts in these kind of flows that we've talked about, it means you're using them for a reason and at strategical points, and you're explaining that to the customer, and it should mean that you can avoid more kind of mass discounting. So for example, if you've got a lapsing customer, that is a great effective time to bring in a discount, and you can say that to them, like, as a valued customer, you haven't shopped with us for a while, we'd love you to come back and shop with us again. I'd always include a full price like message before this to try and get them back full price, but absolutely hit them with that like targeted exclusive discount. If they're unique, it feels more special. It's not like a generic code that they can share or use more than once. So I think that's totally effective and it can be used. And as I said, it's still relevant for premium luxury brands to do that. So use them strategically. Tell the customer why they're getting it and make it unique in like a limited time so it feels special.
Yeah, that the whole bit about lapsed customers I find really interesting. I'd love to hear your advice on this, but behaviorally identifying what lapsed is can be challenging, because there are not every customer buys every X months. If only it was uniform, it'd be so easy. But obviously you get some people are only seasonal shoppers. Some people are only like big peak discount shoppers, others who are buying gifts, they're not buying for themselves, and therefore it's more sporadic. What's your advice to brands out there who might be jumping the gun with seeing somebody who's been lapsed when they're not actually, and they're just in a like fallow cycle? Is this, because you mentioned AI coming in to help do this, is this where you're seeing AI adding value, or is this still something where actually it's quite a manual process using the data?
Yeah, so this is exactly where AI can make it more accurate. So I think, you know, at the moment with a win-back flow, it's often a kind of, it's an average, as you say. Like, we think it's going to be 4 months or 6 months. Let's target them then. And I would always make it a full price, more generic message first before you send them that offer. But yes, now we can start to look at what an individual person's likely lapse time is, and then start to kind of up the communication system around that time. And it doesn't have to be as direct as I said, right? It doesn't have to be you should have shopped again by now. So here's an offer on. It can be that you start to kind of talk to them more frequently, remind them of your USPs. It can be like a softer message.
Yeah, that there's nothing worse than that desperate thing. Why are you not putting the, it's not like a passive aggressive, putting the guilt on the customer for spend more with us. Excellent. So let's talk about segments. Again, segmentation. Everyone talks about segments. Everyone builds segments. But often I find segments are pretty much what they were when I started out in marketing 20 years ago, which is recency, frequency, monetary. And it is really based on purchase bands. What's your advice on, I guess the 2 minutes is, what data should people be passing into an ESP like Klaviyo to help with segmentation? What is meaningful segmentation?
Yeah, so, I mean, you've obviously got your e-commerce data that's coming in from your e-commerce platform, let's say it's Shopify. So that will show you not only purchase behavior, but also browsing behavior. So you can also look at, you know, products viewed on the site, activity on site, even if they're not placing an order with you. I think pulling in kind of your review and referral data as well. So a lot of my clients work with Yotpo for that. That's definitely relevant to pull in and kind of feed into your different segments and flows. Customer service data. So some of my clients work with Gorgeous, which integrates really well. Again, that could be if someone's got an open complaint with you, you want to kind of exclude them from your campaigns for a week or something. Something to think about as well. Quiz data for sure. Like if people are building out, as we said, this kind of first party data and more information on their customers. And then as well, some clients pull in kind of search data from apps like Klaviyo, which will help them with the kind of personalization to kind of take that up a notch. So yeah, I think it's about looking at your full tech stack and hopefully everything integrates really nicely, which a lot of them do. And then thinking about how do we pull this information into the segments and the flows to make everything a bit more, as you said, meaningful, rather than it's just based on their shopping behavior.
So last question, and I'm going to change it slightly, but auditing process. So this is something that I know nothing about and that I've always found quite interesting, like when I've been involved in emails that have been sent. So things like deliverability and all of the things that impact that. Yeah, and also just anything else, I guess. Like, what do you think like someone should be looking at regularly to make the email channel most effective?
Yeah, so I think you need, you know, as I said, there are certain things you need to look at by campaign level, but most metrics you can track on a monthly level and compare kind of month on month and year to make sure things are going in the right direction. So those are all of those key metrics that we've talked about. But most importantly, your open click and conversion rate in terms of looking at that engagement. And then those CRM metrics on top. So the customer lifetime value, your retention rate, if you're tracking that. The bare minimum you can do with these flows is kind of set them up, have them running in the background and go in and change the images for each season. That is like the bare minimum. But most clients I work with understand that actually going in and doing reviews and tweaks to them each month is really powerful. So kind of looking at A-B split tests that you've got running or adding further split paths into them or looking at additional flows to kind of plug gaps in your customer journey. So I think that can be done, if not on a monthly basis, then definitely a quarterly basis, like a kind of really in-depth review. And actually, I found when I was working in-house that we were so busy with the demands of kind of business as usual sends of getting these campaigns out each week. We didn't have as much time as we should have to kind of dedicate to this, which is part of the reason why I work with clients, because I can take that time and do that real deep dive audit into their account and give them real clear optimizations to say, okay, this is how we take things up a level. And here's a really clear strategy when actually they're kind of just running around trying to keep the trade going.
That makes sense. And do you have, this is a bit I've always kind of been intrigued by. So I guess like in terms of like cleansing data and like, you know, when if people aren't responding to emails, or if, you know, people are like moving companies and stuff like that. Like, is there like an audit process that should apply on that side for deliverability benefit?
So I normally have a flow that is ongoing, kind of looking at that segment of people and cleaning them out. So one thing to note is most retailers aren't sending to their full list anyway. They're probably sending to an engaged segment off the bat, which is, you know, someone has opened or clicked an email, let's say, in the last 3 months. Then you can set up something like, it's called a sunset flow in Klaviyo, which is looking at people who are starting to show that they're unengaged with your emails. And it's so important that you do clean these people off, because they're a real risk to your deliverability. So, you know, the first email can be something like, what do you think your most engaging content is? Like, how can you try and re-engage them in email and get them to open it? The subject line could be something like, here's what you've been missing out on, you know. But then the follow-up is a bit more direct, to say, it looks like you haven't been feeling that inspired by our emails recently. You can unsubscribe here. If you want to stay in the loop, click this button. And then if they don't respond to either of those, then you're cleaning them off and suppressing them from your account. Because, yeah, there's no point having that kind of dead weight. You'll be spending more money each month to have them, and they're not responding to you.
Makes sense.
Excellent. Lots of practical, sensible advice. That's what we like. If anybody who's listened has, it's piqued their interest and they're thinking, oh, maybe you can help me, Hannah, how do they connect with you? How do they reach out?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm Hannah Spicer. I'm quite active on there. And then my website is hspicerconsulting.com.
Excellent. Thanks. Well, it's lovely to chat. Thank you for taking the time and sharing your experience and advice. I hope everyone's enjoyed it. And before you go, everybody, don't forget to follow Inside Commerce on LinkedIn and subscribe to the Inside Commerce newsletter.
You're listening to the Inside Commerce podcast, hosted by experienced consultants James Gerd and Paul Rogers. Inside Commerce is your fast track to digital knowledge, featuring interviews with leading e-commerce retailers, industry thought leaders, and the C-suite of key tech companies to explore the latest in digital strategy, customer experience, and tech. Discover what the latest trends really mean and get practical advice based on experience to help fine-tune your e-com strategy and tech stack. Follow us on LinkedIn and reach out to James or Paul if you'd like to discuss an e-commerce project. We hope you enjoy the latest episode.